What you're about to hear is a segment from the Mark Steiner Show archives. Send your thoughts about this show to talk@steinershow.org or tweet me at Mark Steiner. Enjoy.
Good evening, everybody. Yeah. Well, good evening, everybody. Oh, yeah. Well, good evening, everybody.
Welcome. I'm Mark Steiner, and we're going to be talking with some of the G quilters. Jean's Ben Quilters were up here from Alabama. I want to welcome Louisiana Bendoff and Mary Lee Bendoff to the studio. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's good to have you here.
Yes.
Because we start off with that hug, which was a good way to start this conversation
right.
off. So tell me a little bit about where you're from before we start. This place, G's Bend, Alabama. What is this place?
It's Wilcox. It's on the other side of Montgomery, down below Montgomery. It's 18 miles below Alberta. And it's 45 miles in between there and Camden. Camden is Wilcox. We got to schedule Wilcox, too.
Wilcox is the county?
Right.
I understand it's kind of bordered by the Alabama River?
Yes, yes. We have a ferry now, the ferry running. But if it don't make it some rain, the ferry going to have to stop.
So what is it? Let me go to the quilts and come back to the place that you live. You brought these quilts up there on exhibit at the Walters Art Museum for the summer.
Yeah.
And tell us what is it about that tradition and what is so special about the place that Louisiana that you all come from where these quilts are made?
Well, that's what our community is about. It was about we grew up around quilts, and now we still surrounded by quilts. And it's about what's been passed down from generation to generation, and we just feel like it's a tradition that should be carried on.
How far back does this tradition go?
Way back, over 100 and something years.
So, I mean, what do you know about the beginnings of where this came from?
As far as I know, the beginning, where I got my beginning started from my mother, Ayola Moses.
Uh-huh.
And she taught me how I was wanted to learn how all the time see her sitting in piece and quilt, tears be running out of eyes. And I'd be wondering what she'd be doing and then a mouth work, and I didn't know what it all about. Sometimes she'd be sitting there singing, groaning, doing like that. And I asked her what the song was named, The Days Are Past and Gone. And I just love to hear her sing because she'd have home that song so good. And tears be running down her cheek and thing, and that'd make me feel so good about it. To see her, you know, and I wanted to be just like her. I wanted to live like her. She was a sweet lady.
Obviously, you are too.
Yes, I tried my best. Sometime I don't be, you know, old.
We can't be nice all the time. So how old were you when you first started quilting?
12 years old. That's when I asked her to teach me how to piece quilt. I was 12 years old. And I've been working at quilts ever since. Some part of the time I had to stop because I was having babies real fast, and it take time to, you know, to tend the kids and piece quilt, too. Because at the time you could piece the quilt, but you couldn't quit them at the time. It's because you know how the kids is. They be from one place to the other. We've got to try to keep them straight. And I tell you, it's a mess. And now it's more and more a mess than it was then. Because the kids are more better then than it is now. But they can get into everything now.
And there's lots of them, as you described earlier.
Because the kids is more active. They have more sense than the kids had way back.
They have more sense now?
Yeah. When the kids was born back in my time when I was having my babies, their eyes didn't come open until 3 days after they was born. Now the kids' eyes open when they be birthed, and that makes a whole lot of difference. That make them have more energy, more to do, more to get into, because they see where it came from.
And you have four of those kids that she's talking about, Louisiana.
Yes, I do. I sure do.
So now, tell me how you got into this world of quilting.
Same way Mary Lee did, by watching my great grandmother and my mother and my aunt. It was just, like I said, a family tradition that was passed on.
One of the things I saw in the movie I was watching last night, the about your, the quilting, the, what you all are doing, was it was like a collective group. Everybody was sitting around together.
Yes.
Making a quilt. Is that how it works?
No, that's quilting the quilt.
What does that mean?
Making a quilt is you do it on your own. Mm-hmm. But when you quilting the quilt, we beat the card now and beat it all the way across the line. Then put the top on top of there. Then hook it in the frame. We are using four frame, and then four strings up in the log, and it roll up this end and roll up that end and that end and nails in, and then pull our chair up under there and go to sit down and go to quilting. And that quilting is, at first when I first started, it hurt because it's sticking up the fingers. Still stick my fingers up.
There's some sharp needles and big sharp needles. I saw those needles.
And then when you get through, the quilts look beautiful. We were doing share quilt. Now we do quilt straight most of the time.
Now, what do you mean shared quilt and quilt straight?
Share quilt is whirling around. You know, a little corner. This is it, quilt this corner. The one quilt that corner. The one in the mirror quilt, that part in the mirror. It's four corners of the quilt.
Right.
And if it's four people there, they do their share, uh-huh, and the one in the mirror, they had each mirror, they had to get the mirror part.
So,
and that's called share quilt.
So now, when you how does a shared quilt relate to the individual quilts you do? What's the difference?
It's the difference is they now we do the straight down, come straight, and when you were sharing, you go curl around. You curl around, it's like a hood.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're doing it straight, I go straight into you. But then when you do the sharing, you come to me like a hood. You throw your arm around like a hood.
I like that.
And that makes it love. That's all that joy. That's all that peace and happiness in that quilt. But it's not as much as it used to be. We don't sing as much as we used to around a quilt. We'll do some talk, sit down and talk a lot. But we don't sing and pray like we used to do.
Really?
No, we don't.
We're talking with two of the women who are part of G's Bend in Alabama, who make these incredible quilts. We just heard Mary Lee Bendoff and her daughter-in-law, Louisiana Bendoff, is with us. They are two of the quilters. Now, what you were just saying about you don't sing as much as you used to, one of the things that I was when watching the film last night and listening to the CD.
Yeah.
Was the beauty of the music as you were working was just...
That was then. Now it's just like I told you. When you... At that time, the people's eyes were still closed when they was born for 3 days. Now, we so wise now. We don't go at that way now.
Like, do you miss that?
Yeah, they miss a whole lot. But they sang the other kind of song. They don't sing the groans and the moan. They sing, but they sing different songs now.
Do you sing when you're quilting, Louisiana?
If I'm home alone, I don't. I can't sing. So I sing in the shower, and I sing when I'm alone. So
singing in the shower is the only place people want to hear me sing, too.
She tried to be shy singing, but she have a beautiful voice. She really can sing, but she won't. She's shy. She don't want people to know she can sing.
That's me.
But now, me, I want people to hear me singing. I want the story to go out from my singing because I be praising the Lord when I'm singing. She be high in the hood. She want to sing it in the corner in the dark while she got nobody here. She have a beautiful voice. And I really want to know why she don't do it. But then some of it is shy. I don't know what the rest of it is. But she is shy a little bit.
It's okay. So did you think there's a when I was listening to – looking at some of the quilts, and I have not seen them up close yet, but I'm going to go down and see them. But when I was looking at them on the video do you think that there's a – that the way people sing and the spirituals that go into your lives when you sing the songs and how you live your life, is that inside that quilt for you?
It's inside of
That's
it.
That's right.
It's your, I mean, because when you're making that quilt, you're thinking about things that happen in your life And sometimes, like Mary Lee said, we do sit there and, you know, and pray and sing. But like I said, I only do it when I'm alone. So, but I mean, all that's in there. I mean, because that's part of your life.
So, I mean, so these quilts, I mean, because, you know, now that you become known and people know these quilts and they hang them and they buy them and do whatever else they do with the quilts. But there's something deeper about these quilts. It reminded me of, I'll tell you what it reminded me of. I don't know if you know about this, but out west, and I spent time out west in the, with some Navajos who make blankets. They weave blankets. And they always said to me when they were doing their blankets that, and they these beautiful blankets, these gorgeous things. Yeah. And that they said the spirit is in those blankets.
Right, right. And that's the way it is in the queer. The spirit is in the queer. God, he taught our folk parents. They didn't know anything, nothing about artwork. We didn't know nothing about artwork. Louisiana probably might have known because she was growed up in the eye-open space. We were growed up in the closed eye space. But now the eye-open, they got more knowledge to things than the closed eye did have. But the knowledge what we had, it was to praise God and give him praise because we didn't have nothing else. We didn't know nothing. We couldn't sell our quilts or nothing. We just kept our quilts to keep kids warm and they like spreading on the floor, put them on the floor where they could have somewhere to lay or sit. Sometimes the floor be pretty rough there and they spread the quilt out there and have something to lay on. That's so much of love. When we piece that quilt, we piece it with joy and love in it.
Well, we're going to take a very short break and come right back and talk more about these quilts with my two lovely guests here. Mary Lee Bendoff, who you just heard, and her daughter-in-law, Louisiana Bendoff, up from G's Bend, Alabama. You're listening to a segment from the Mark Steiner Show archives. Send your thoughts about this show to talk@steinershow.org or tweet me at Mark Steiner. And on our way to break, it's Tea for Two, Tommy Dorsey and Warren Covington. Warren Covington was born today in 1921. Back. This is Mark Steiner here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM. All I Have to Do is Dream by the Everly Brothers, written by Felice Bryant, who was born today in 1925. Just a reminder that we are listening to a segment from the Mark Steiner Show archives. Send your thoughts about this show to talk@steinershow.org or tweet me at Mark Steiner.
Many years I keep tallin', tallin'. I've been patiently waiting, waiting for my blessed Lord.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and we're talking about G's Bend, the architecture of the quilt, and these quilts being made. They go back four generations in G's Bend, Alabama, right by the Alabama River, and just... an amazing story about these quilts and the women who make them. And two of those women are with us in the studio now, Mary Lee Bendoff and her daughter-in-law, Louisiana Bendoff. And I love those names. I love that name, Louisiana.
Yeah, such a beautiful name.
How'd you get that name?
Thank you. Well, I got it from my grandmother, but I tell people our parent name does. It's a lot of states and a lot of different places, and I think they named us that because they thought we wasn't going to go too many places being born where we were born at. Uh-huh. So, But I can kind of change that because we've been to a whole lot of different places.
Have you?
Yes, we have.
Done some traveling.
Yes, we have.
Because of the quilts or just because you like to travel?
No, because of the quilts, of course.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't afford to go anywhere. Okay. The trip we've been on, if it wasn't for the quilts, no.
So when you started making these quilts, I mean, just because that's what you do, you never thought it was going to be this artistic explosion, did you?
Never thought that.
No, if somebody would have told me that, I wouldn't have believed it.
Uh-huh.
Because when the first show opened, it opened in Houston. And I mean, when we got there, oh my goodness. You know, it was amazing because my great-grandmother quit was in that show. And to see it hanging on the wall, it just really just did something for me. And then, you know, my mother-in-law quit was there and these other people that I grew up in the community with, it was hanging on the wall. And
mm-hmm.
You can imagine how it feels to go in a place and see something that people that you love have done. And, I mean, and I tell people, it still to me is more about my great-grandmother quilt hanging on the wall than mine because she died and she never left G's Bend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and now people know her all around the world and, you know.
Two things struck me as you were talking about that. I mean, one is that the fact that these quilts have lasted that long. I mean, that you keep them in your families, that they're used. They're not something you hang on the wall. These are things your great-grandmother's quilt was used to wrap you right?
Yes, it was. I mean, we slept under those quilts. And, you know, and people wonder about, they always asking us, how do you preserve your quilt? We don't know because we can only say what happened. I'm not going to say I think. It was God. He kept them so that they can do this. They could open a door for us. And it was by him that it happened because, like you said, fabric don't last that long.
Yeah.
And this fabric, it was, I mean, we laid on the floor on it. We pulled it across the floor. And we slept on the room. And
right.
And yet still they was, you know, they had started coming apart, but they were still intact.
Because now it's an art treasure, but it was a quilt.
It was a quilt. It was a quilt.
And so the idea, how does it strike you now that you always have been quilters? I mean, that's what you do, you know, you do other stuff in your life, I know, but you make quilts, yeah. Part of the tradition of your community.
Uh-huh.
But now people see that as art.
Yeah.
I mean, you never thought of yourself as an artist before that, did you?
No, never thought that I was an artist. When I found out that I was doing artwork, that was when I saw the quilts in the museum.
Mm-hmm.
Matt and them were telling me about Matt and his daddy, Bia. They was telling we was doing artwork. I said, there ain't no artwork. Nobody never said nothing to us about no artwork. My mama didn't know anything about art. I didn't know anything about art. I didn't tell my daughter anything about art. The only way I found out about art was through Bia Annette and Matt Annette. They did causing us to say that we was doing artwork. All of my quilt was made for the keep warm.
Mm-hmm.
Keep hugged up around us. It used to be so cold, I stayed on the ground a whole week. But now it don't last overnight. It's on and off just like that. It don't hardly get cold in Alabama now. But before then, it stayed cold.
Yeah, the weather has changed, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, a whole lot. And I just thank the Lord that he has brought us from so far. It because of the prayer our parents had prayed for us. And I always to say, my mama and them should have had enjoyed this. But since they didn't, I can enjoy it, and I enjoy every bit of it.
And you can feel them enjoying it at the same time.
Still, right. And I go and enjoy myself, and I be pleased with the Lord allowing me to go. And let the people know how much the Lord and what he had done for us. I show it in my look. I show it in my speaking. I may not know how to talk so well.
You talk just fine.
I just thank the Lord for what he do for us, because without him, it was nothing that we can do. And it still ain't nothing we can do without him. We just have to depend on him for our everyday need, because God is good, and he keeping us alive.
Did you when these people first came in and saw your artwork from outside of G's Bend and discovered them that way? I mean, they didn't discover them because you had made them, but when they first discovered them for themselves, and they told you that this was art and worth something, did you think they were crazy?
Yes. My auntie, I was there to my auntie's house, and she said she had sold them a quilt, and she said, "You know these people going around here, I think they crazy." I said, "Well, if you send them to my house, then." They had been down there 2 years before I got to know them, but I had been seeing them passing through. But all the time I'd be up doing tending to sick people, waiting on people, helping them there, you know. Mm-hmm. But now my time done run out for that. Now my time going to enjoy people's and lift their spirit up, because at that time I was lifting up a lot of sick people's spirit. I go to them and clean them up and help them to, you know.
In your community.
In my community, right. But now the Lord done blessed me so I can go. And the first time I went, it was in, I had went with Bill and Matt. The first time they came down there, Jane Farner and Linus, James Linden, and a lot of other people came down there. And I went back with them on a bus they had. They came down there in. And I really enjoyed it. So he was telling them about, he wanted to make a show and have the books and everything. And the people were saying, "I'm not going with them." I got up and told them, I said, "Y'all just don't know. Them some nice people. They treated me so nice wise. I the only one went from Alabama that time. Lonza was supposed to have been with, but she got, her brother died and she couldn't go. But all after that, she came back. She went every time after that until she had a stroke. And that bothers me about her. It really stays on my mind. But she can sit up and hold her great-great-grandbaby. And I thank the Lord for that. That means a lot to her. That let me know that the Lord is still working with her.
Her great-great-grandbaby.
Great-great-grandbaby.
Now, you were talking about you have, just you said you have
22 years of great-grand. But Lonza have great-great-grand.
So, one of the things that really struck me about this, that about G's Bend, I told you all that, I've never been where you all live, but know Alabama a little bit. This part of Alabama where you come from, your families, I mean, trace their roots back to the days before slavery in this particular place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, that's where my great-great-great-grandfather came from. So, you know, he was there, and, you know, I've been learning the stories about, you know, he never wore shoes. He never wore shoes.
Even in winter?
He never wore shoes. And it's amazing. And my uncle told me he didn't get a pair of shoes until he was like 12 years old. And, you know, it's amazing. I mean, it's some amazing stories in G's Bend. And it's some amazing history in G's Bend. And, you know, it's amazing that it took the quilt for us to really realize how amazing the history is in G's Bend. It took the quilt and it took the Arnettes to come to G's Bend and make us realize how important history really is. Because when you look back on your life and if you can go back and trace some of your history and find out what your foreparents did, you know, parent, grand, great-grand, great-on down, and you realize some of the things that happened in your life, it all come from that. And you know there are some good things and there are also some bad things that come from it. But a lot of things that happen, you know, if you look back over it, sometimes you can kind of make things that happened to them not happen to you, because you learn more about where you came from,
mm-hmm,
and about yourself. So these quilts done that for us. And it was the fact that they got hung on walls and people admired them, and they say that, you know, and, you know, you walk around a museum, you see people crying, and I said, "Why are they crying?" You know, and sometimes I just stand there and listen to them. And And you just wonder, how can a quilt do that to somebody?
What are they crying? What have you heard people say?
They crying because they just find them amazing. And I don't know a lot about art because, you know, but I've learned that, you know, you can look at a piece of art and see something totally different than me. But they just amazed at how the quilt talked to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they amazed at the fact that we say we don't know anything about art, but then there's the quilt hanging on the wall saying you're an artist.
That's right.
But I still don't call myself an artist. I don't. But like I said, we just let a quilt speak for us most of the time because I think they do a great job of it, and we're just glad they're hanging, and we're glad people coming out and enjoying them, and we're glad that, you know, we go to schools and we talk to kids, and these quilts allow us to do that. It has allowed us to have a voice, so, you know, to talk to people. I mean, you know, when you talk to small people like us, just common plain people,
mm-hmm.
It's amazing that you can say something that change people's lives. I mean, and make them feel good about themselves, because when we was growing up, we wasn't praised for things. And so, you know, we tell people it's not so much about how you be praised, but how you take it when you are praised. You know, some people, when they get to a certain point, they change who they are. But I tell them, I don't want the quilts to change who I am. I want to remain who I am inside and try and say something that can make people realize it doesn't matter what kind of background you came from. If you be kind to people and you try and lift people up instead of tearing them down, you would be amazed how much better the world would be.
Maybe that's one of the reasons that people cry at your quilts, because all the things that you just talked about and Mary Lee Bendoff that you talked about earlier, I mean, that's inside those quilts.
Yes.
I mean, it's your great-great-grandparents from slavery through all the stuff people went through in G's Bend to survive.
Yes.
And also the power, the spirit and beauty that comes out of you.
Right.
All that's inside those quilts.
Inside the quilt. Thank God for that. You can see the quilts, how they lean. Look at that quilt and see how it lean and mm-hmm. rock. You could say, well, she was rocking and crying when she was making it. Just praying to the good Lord that he will help us to go through. That old people's, mostly of them. Now, this is the young generation.
What we're talking about
this
here,
what
Mary Lee Bendoff's pointing out is in some pictures here we're looking at of the quilts themselves, and the younger generation's quilts a little different than the older generation's
right.
quilts, just in terms of what's in them and the symmetry of them and the and strange
could,
shapes that
yes,
these quilts come out of.
And you can see the jazz, what the young people's made. You
uh-huh.
can see the prayers and the praise of the old people's may.
That's interesting.
Yes, it is.
You see that too, Louisiana?
Well, we just became a newer generation, and
uh-huh.
we really just carrying on the old tradition. Like I told them, I still take the basic that my great grandmother taught me and turn it into a new generation of housetop. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's what's interesting. One quick question. When you do these quilts, there aren't like stories in your head when you do them. They just come out.
Come out.
Right?
Just comes
come out.
Out. Yeah. That's right. Out from your soul.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a lot. Right.
You sitting down, you design what you want to make, but you don't never do what you really want to do. You do what the spirit tell you to do. If you do what you want to do, he won't come out the way. So you have to do what the Spirit tell you. And the Spirit will bring that love and joy out.
So whether it's coming from the eyes the eyes closed generation or the eyes open generation.
The eyes closed generation. And then the start of the open eyes generation.
It's still the same,
but
it's
more jazz and it is spirit-like.
Ladies, you have made my day.
Thank you.
This has been wonderful. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us here.
And thank you for doing the work you do.
And thank the Lord for my daughter-in-law, Louisiana. And I thank the Lord for you, Mark, for having us here with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Louisiana Bendoff and Mary Lee Bendoff, her daughter-in-law, two of the quilters, the Jeez Benz quilters. I really do mean it. You have just made my day smile. Thank you.
August the 25th will be my birthday.
Happy birthday.
I'll be 72 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
And many more to come.
Yes, many more to come.
So you can see some great greats.
Yes.
Thank you, ladies, so
much. Okay, thank you for having us.
We're going to come right back and talk a bit more about Jeez Benz Quilts with Linda Day Clark, whose photographs of the Jeez Benz Quilters is on exhibit as a companion exhibit at the Walters Art Museum.
It opened my eyes to so many things. I really began to just understand and value who these people are. Their wisdom and understanding runs so deep. It's amazing. I would absolutely trust them with my life.
And you'll hear more of the music and more of the talks. Don't go away. What you're about to hear is a segment from the Mark Steiner Show archives. Send your thoughts about this show to talk@steinershow.org or tweet me at Mark Steiner. Enjoy.
Memories oft returning of her tears and sighs.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We continue our conversation about the Jeez Benz Quilts with a woman who's chronicled this, one of the great artists in our community. Linda Day Clark is an artist and educator, professor of fine arts at Coppin State University, whose photographs of the Jeez Benz Quilters is on exhibit as a companion exhibit at the Walters Art Museum. It's a one-woman show. Linda, welcome. Good to see you again.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So these photographs that you've done of the Jeez Benz women, the quilters, how did this come about?
It came about a number of ways. The most direct way is that in 2002, when the Jeez Benz Quilters were having that big exhibition at the Whitney Museum in New York, the New York Times called me and said, Linda, would you go photograph the Jeez Benz Quilters for the article we want to do and respond to the exhibition? I said, sure. You know, it sounded fascinating to me, and so I wanted to do it. So I did the research just to find out where the place was. And at that moment, Jeez Benz was not shown on any hard copy map. Uh-huh. It certainly wasn't shown on any Google map, any, you know, internet map. So how do I find this remote location? And that's the beauty and the story of it, how remote it is and what that remoteness implies. So I just, one of the things that me and my husband, Carl Clark, got on the phone and started calling sheriff stations throughout Alabama saying, have you ever heard of Jeez Benz? And everyone said, no, no, no. Finally, we got the right sheriff who said, yes, I know where Jeez Benz is. And this is how you get there. And make sure you get in your car that you have everything you'll need. Because once you pass this point, there's nothing. And I thought, well, he's exaggerating. But he might have understated it. I flew into Montgomery, and from Montgomery, I rented a car and drove to Selma, Alabama. And from Selma, I drove on to Jeez Benz. And so that's maybe 2-3 hours drive from the airport. And the part from Selma to Jeez Benz is dirt roads and very few signs for this, you know, urban dweller. And it was it was in the middle of the night and it was raining and going, you know, on this what's like a path in the middle of the woods and praying. And what I found was just a blessing. Mary Lee came out and met us at this fork in the road where the county road actually meets up with Jeez Benz, and led us to her house. And everything after that you couldn't have dreamed for anything better.
As an artist and as an intellectual, somebody who kind of probes the world, mm-hmm. and very specifically probes the African-American world and, mm-hmm. and what it says. So tell me what this experience being in G's Bend said to you, what you discovered there that really opened your eyes to some new things.
It opened my eyes to so many things. I went with, as I said, the reporter from the New York Times. But my family is from the South, not as deep South as this is. Mm-hmm. So I'm used to that sort of Southern way of life, that Southern vernacular. But if you can imagine in their isolation, how extreme those things become. And so I actually ended up sort of becoming the interpreter between the G's Bend ladies and the reporter. And after a while, I realized, you know, not only was I frustrated with this, but that it's almost a disservice because
to
the G's Bend ladies, because it's not that they aren't being profound, that they're not saying wonderful things. It's like we've walked into a place and they're speaking a different language and we're sort of the stupid ones who just don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like the reporter probably should have begun to, instead of continue to interpret and reform what they say, to use that beautiful language that they were using at the moment. And so that was a little frustrating. I really began to just understand and value who these people are. Most of the quilters have very little formal education, maybe second grade, sixth grade educations. But their wisdom and understanding runs so deep. It's amazing. I would absolutely trust them with my life. When trouble comes, I want to stand with them.
Right, right.
These people are survivors, and they don't survive as victims. They survive victorious. They're fierce. I mean, it just, you know, try to live the life that they have lived and see who among us has their capacity for joy and beauty
and, they do.
And love. It's amazing.
We're talking with Linda Day Clark right now, who is, has the photographic exhibit, a one-woman show at the Walters Art Museum to go along with the G's Bend quilters, where she documented them as a photographer. She's an artist and educator, professor of fine arts at Coppin State University. We're looking right now at a screen on her computer of some of the photographs that Linda has done. And this is some of the quilts. This is one of the older quilts, right?
Right. I believe it's one of the vintage quilts. It's a
right.
quilt by Mary Lee Bendoff. And it's one of my favorites. And that article that they ran in the New York Times said that these people have created some of the greatest American works of art. And that's not an exact quote. But one of the things that's fascinating to me and was fascinating to the art critics is that they were creating these, what looks like modern art, in absolute isolation, unlike the modern artists who were feeding off of each other and were sharing an experience that led to that pivotal moment in modern art. These women weren't looking around. They weren't even thinking about making art. They were performing a necessity. They were trying to keep their families warm. And so this is jazz. This is the amazing improvisation. This is an amazing integration, I believe, of something that just is ingrained and follows through in their Africanness that comes with this distinct pattern.
What do you mean their Africanness?
Well, I mean, part of it's conceptual, and then to me, part of it's obvious that talking about a plantation community.
Right.
So we're talking about generations of Africans who were brought over and enslaved on this plantation and other plantations and that are integrating them. You don't leave everything behind. And
right.
so some of that follows through.
And when you talked about their isolation, mm-hmm. because this area, the way Mary Lee in Louisiana were describing it, they live in an area where nobody comes to, pretty much. That's been there for generations and generations.
Yeah. One of the things that's fascinating is that it's called G's Bend because it sits on the bend of the Alabama River. So it's almost an island, except that it's connected, you know, at one point to the rest of the land. That's an interesting structure in itself. But what they did was they would take the ferry across the river and go to Camden or go to Selma, and that's, you know, was their main connection.
Mm-hmm.
But when King was marching through the South, Martin Luther King was mm-hmm. marching through Selma for civil rights, voting rights, and these G's benders were getting on the ferry and going across, the townspeople thought, oh, no, they're making trouble. So we'll stop the ferry. And so they concluded the ferry service. And that further isolated this community because it was a sharecropping. It was a poor community. And so you had to have a car to drive, you know, 100 miles in this direction and come back around to one of those towns. So that isolated them and created, in my opinion, you know, an amazing solidarity of depending on each other, depending on yourself, working together. So to me, one of the things that's really beautiful is that bond from those enslaved Africans. Then we have the abolition of slavery. And these aren't people who made that great migration. They're not the slaves who said, I'm going north.
Mm-hmm.
They stayed. And so very few people moved in and very few people moved out. And so this is a continuation from the slaves to the sharecroppers to the proud landowners that Mary Lee and the other quilters are. So to me, it's a fascinating story.
Photograph not just the artwork, but the people mm-hmm. themselves mm-hmm. as well.
Yes.
And that's the river. That's the Alabama River that's...
Well, it's a beautiful place. This is a place called Paradise that we're looking at. It's a lot of swampland
paradise.
There. Yeah, it's paradise. And so I've tried to show the quilters and the place. One of my favorite images is an image of one of the quilters sitting out on her porch picking collard greens. Preparing mm-hmm. to, you know, preparing
with a quilt
collard greens
in front of her on the line.
With a quilt on the line in front of her. And I like the slices of life there. But I also try to show the men, the children. I'm interested in the whole community. I think it's an amazing culture that has adapted and persevered there.
I mean, they really can tell that you've been just completely taken by them.
I have been, and they have adopted me, which I feel blessed.
I could tell when I saw you and Mary Lee bend off for meeting in the hallway here. I could see that.
They have adopted me, and their religion is so important to them. And they've embraced me in that way as well. When I stay with Mary Lee, we're in church. If I arrive on Monday, we're in church on Monday. We're in church on
Literally
Tuesday.
In church.
Yes, we're in church on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday and Saturday. You know, I mean, and Sunday. We're there.
What kind of church is it?
Mary Lee attends a church called Ye Shall Know the Truth Baptist Church.
Hello.
Yes. And I was blessed to see its evolution. You know, mm-hmm. it's a real rock the house Baptist church. But when I first went, they were meeting in a tent in the field. And that has evolved to the new structure that they have. And it's a wonderful feeling, very inviting. It's not a community that says we'll go to church on Sunday and then live our life as we like Monday through and then go back Sunday. It's one.
What you're describing are people who are kind of part of the land
mm-hmm.
where their spirituality is how they live their daily lives. It's not the urban, I'll go to church on Sunday and go off and do what I want the rest of the week.
Exactly.
This is something inside of them.
Absolutely. And
In their quilts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I feel it in their quilts. I mean, I would just tell the viewers, as you go to the museum, and I encourage you, please go to the museum and see the quilts. But to understand them in all of their glory, you know, when we're looking at them displayed, you know, on the walls there, and it's nice and quiet and proper in the museum. But these quilts have so much going on. When the quilts are being made, the women are often quilting them in their homes and designing, you know, them in their homes at night after they've put their families to bed, you know, and fed them and done the amazing work that they do. Then they're quilting at night. But then they come together to finish the quilts together. So there's singing, there is laughing, there is talking, there's cutting up, there's children running around. It's a wonderful, you know, communal call and response event. And so, you know, there's so much that happens. And then not to, you know, leave out the part of the loving, you know, ability to pull that quilt up over you and feel warm and safe.
Where do you think deep love comes from in these people, that it's in their quilts and it's just the way they present themselves and live? What's the root of that?
I think it is culture, but I think it is largely their faith. Their faith, you know, is abiding. It is how they, you know, live their lives. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, I said they have very little formal education. I think that their education really is strengthened through the church, the reading of the Bible, and the direct talking, you know, fellowship with the ministers. You know, I've sat in church and people said, you know, well, what do I do when my husband does X, Y, Z? And the minister stops the sermon or whatever, and we're going to talk about it. It's a integral part. And so if you're walking and talking with God, you know, every moment of your life, how are you not going to show love?
What do you think, not what do you think, but when I first heard the music the other night, the music was an old music.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's almost something that you might hear. I thought I might hear in recordings from the early part of the 20th century that came out of the 19th century.
There's a wonderful integration of the old and the new with these ladies. But, yes, Mary Lee has an, you know, lovely, raspy, you know, soulful voice that when she sings those gospel hymns, you cry. And they're part of her. They're, you know, they come out whether, you know, we're in church or at the store or in the house or walking down the street. And so they're beautiful. They're the old songs. It's a mix of the old and the new, but it's mostly the old showing the timeless value of it. And that becomes sort of new to us today.
And just to wind up here a bit, one of the things that strikes me about all this and hearing you talk about them and meeting the women and hearing them talk about themselves is that I don't know why I keep getting stuck on this, but I am, is the peacefulness of these people. And in contrast to the madness we see around us all the time, that's something that they've somehow preserved and kept alive in themselves, despite the oppression of coming from where they came from.
Oh, yes.
That they've preserved this quality.
That radiates from them. And it's a very interesting phenomenon. Nettie Young, one of the senior most quilters, in an interview she was talking and she said, you know, I can't tell you about how hard it was for us when I was coming up. It was a starvation life. We had nothing, and you couldn't waste anything. She said, but, you know, it looked like people were happier then than people are today. People have so much, but no one looks happy, is what she said. But these women and this community seem to have a balance of understanding what's important, and that gives them a peace. They're still listed, I believe, this county that they live in is one of the poorest counties in the United States. But that woman, Nettie Young, who what most of us sort of sophisticated city-dwelling urbanites would think is a shack that she lives in and focus on her poverty, she donated land that is probably worth more than $10,000 to the church. So that's not what we usually think about as poverty. I know what I might do with $10,000, but it wasn't what she thought was important to do.
I think that's a great way to sum this up in many ways. Linda Day Clark, it's always a pleasure to see you. It's been wonderful to have you in the studio.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
You're listening to a segment from the Mark Steiner Show archives. Send your thoughts about this show to talk@steinershow.org or tweet me @MarkSteiner. And on our way to break, Unchained Melody by the Platters. Herb Reed of the Platters, born today in 1931.
Oh, my love, my darling, I've hungered